Welcome to The Cockatoo, your source for all things Australian music in the US of A. We're coming to you from Los Angeles, California, and this is the interview part of our newsletter where we talk about musical journeys to the United States. Today, I'm very happy to be talking to Darren Cordeau, a singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer who is the frontman of Australian rock band Kiss Chasey and more recently Daz and the Demons. His career has seen hit records in the early to mid-2000s, the band breaking up in 2015, a Kiss Chasey comeback in 2022, and now a new project based in LA called, as I said, Daz and the Demons. So let's find out a little bit more about this Melburnian's journey across the Pacific. Welcome, Daz.
G'day, mate. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Very good to see you. So let's just give the listeners a little bit of a basic understanding of who you are. You grew up in Melbourne, right?
That's right. Yeah, I grew up in a shithole town called Cranbourne. I'm not sure what it's like these days, but at the time I didn't really have a great time there. There wasn't much to do. It was very much a suburban kind of wasteland, and so music was my escape, I guess. And my dad was a singing teacher. He's a singing teacher, so that was kind of my first introduction to music, just having it permeate the walls of my bedroom there in Cranbourne, all the students coming to the house and singing the hits of the day, every week. And so then we moved to the Mornington Peninsula, which is where I met the guys in Kiss Chasey. We took it from there.
So it's actually a band out of the Mornington Peninsula versus Melbourne, yeah?
That's right, yeah. We say Melbourne just to kind of, just lump it in, but I guess it was, more specifically the peninsula.
Kiss Chasey starts in 2002. You guys put out three studio albums, 2005, 2007, and 2009. I figure you're pretty busy touring and playing around Australia at that time.
Yeah, I think between 2004 and 2012 was just non-stop. We were very, very busy. If it wasn't touring, it was recording. It was TV appearances. It was very much just like that was the career, and that was like, this is what we're doing. When 2015 came around, it was going to be the 10-year anniversary of our first album. And we were kind of like, should we do like a special tour where we do that album in its entirety? And I kind of put my hand up and I said, why don't we do it as an anniversary, but also call it our final tour and kind of bookend our career that way? I think people at that point were waiting for us to put out a fourth record, and then we just kind of said, no, we're not. This is the end. And so that was the end. Yeah, 2015, we toured that album and also said goodbye. And then I moved here. I got actually that same year I got married, and then the following year I got divorced. And then there was nothing tethering me to Australia aside from family, obviously. So I was kind of just like, I had my eye on the States for a while, because we'd come here, recorded like our last record. We'd done a lot of showcases here. My best buddy Jai, who signed our band, was based here. And so it was kind of like, okay, well, that's the logical next step. If I want to kind of continue making music and kind of seeing how diverse I can take things, coming here, where it's just like there's a real economy for it, just kind of made sense.
Okay, so just to peg this in time, 2015 is when the band calls it quits and you do your final tour in Australia. When did you move to the United States?
It was 2017. I'd kind of came here in 2016 for like 3 months to do, to test the waters and do some writing sessions and things like that. And then I went back for like 6 months and then made the final plunge in 2017.
Okay, so tell us about that period in 2016 and 2017. How did you manage that move? What was going on? You said you came out for 3 months, you did some recording. How did all that go down logistically for you?
Yeah, it was difficult, actually. It was probably the hardest time in my life. I'd just gone through a divorce, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to move here. I had a whole studio set up in Australia. So I was like, okay, I sold off basically everything I owned, because I was like, I don't have a job lined up in the States, and I'm essentially starting over. It doesn't matter who my band is in Australia. We weren't big in the States. So it was kind of like, I was taking a risk. It's funny because a lot of people always say, you move to LA. And a lot of people who do that have this kind of Peter Pan syndrome or something like that. But for me, it was the opposite, because I could have lived a comfortable Peter Pan kind of life if I just stayed in my band in Australia where people knew who I was, but it was actually a much harder reality to come here to be a tiny fish in a big pond. And so it was, it, yeah, I sold everything. I didn't have a job lined up. I didn't know how I was going to be able to stay here. I didn't have like a visa or anything like that. I could have applied for the O-1. I was gathering all my documents for that. But it just seemed like really a lot of hard work. And my buddy Jai, who was kind of like, why don't you just go for like an E3? E3 visa is like an Australian professional visa. And so this basically this bar slash event space wanted somebody to come and, you know, book entertainment for them and things like that. And based on my history and also the relationships that I did have here in LA, they kind of took a liking to me and put me on their payroll. And that's this place in Silver Lake that I still work at. And they said they'd sponsor me. So that was kind of the best case scenario, because it was in the world of like in the neighborhood where I wanted to be, surrounded by the kind of people that I want to be surrounded by. But it was a consistent paycheck and I could still do my writing and production. It was kind of like found me, and it was kind of like a real kind of savior in a way, and also introduced me to a great community here.
From when the band breaks up in 2015, after that you get married and have and get divorced, so there's obviously a little bit of turmoil in your life throughout that period. You have a potential career, things are looking good, and yet you decide to come out here to the US and start a hospitality job. Tell us about what you're feeling in order to compel you to do that.
It was strange. I mean, it was funny because even when Kiss Chasey was at its I always felt like, you know, I always had this head on my shoulders where I knew it wasn't going to last forever. Like I kind of like, it's like it, very rarely does that stretch out for a lifetime, you know, for anybody. So I always felt like it had an end date, and I always was in the back of my mind, it's like, I'll probably have to get like a 9 to 5 at some point, but this is fun. This is great. And I'm enjoying this now, but it's not going to last. And so when I moved here and that was the case, and I was kind of like, you know, I've got to get on with it and work a job. It felt like it was just inevitable. But I felt grateful that I was doing it here. And I was still the chance for me to still grow as an artist, that opportunity was infinitely bigger now, even though I was starting from a much lower point here. So that was what kind of kept me going and still does, really. It was definitely, you know, it's humbling to kind of go from one thing to the other. But at the same time, I was so ready. Like at that point, that had been my life for such a concentrated part of my life for so long that I was really ready to kind of let it go. And when I came here, I didn't even lean on that at all. I didn't talk to people about my old band, or I definitely didn't rest on my laurels or anything. And it took me until this last like kind of 24 months to really kind of, you know, when Kiss Chasey did this tour that we did, you know, last year, and the response has been what it has been, it really took me that to kind of be like, okay, we actually did something really cool and something that's increasingly hard for artists to experience now, where you're someone's like favorite band, because we came from an era when things were a lot more streamlined and not everything was so disparate. Now people kind of maybe have their favorite song or their favorite playlist, but to have their favorite band it seems like a rarity now. So the fact that we came from that era where we held a special place in a lot of people's hearts is a really cool thing, and to come back and still have people feel that way, it kind of made me appreciate what I'd done in that period of my life.
You guys have gone the full distance in Australia as a band, and you as the front man of the band, you know, you've seen the industry properly, and then you move out here without the band and with the band broken up. So it's a completely fresh start for you musically, right?
That's right. Very much. The hardest thing once that band broke up was kind of like, you know, I've always had very eclectic taste and always wanted to like see what I could do with that. And when the band broke up, I was kind of like, well, okay, well, what kind of artist do I want to be? Do I even want to be an artist? You know, when I moved here, I actually didn't have any intention of doing that. I was more like, I'll just maybe do some co-writing, some producing and see where that goes, and just kind of be willing to pivot if I need to, you know. And then, yeah, the pandemic happened, and again, you kind of shut off from the world. And I felt like that kid in suburban Cranbourne again. I was kind of like, fuck, I'm alone and I'm bored. And what did I do when I was bored? I picked up a guitar, and that was my relief. That was my release as well. It was kind of like, you know, it was this cure to all my anxieties and boredom and everything like that. So that's when I started kind of tinkering away with this stuff. I started writing these songs that became what is now Daz and the Demons. It was really like this kind of great distilling of all my tastes up until that point. Like everything I'd listened to, like growing up with like my dad listening to Del Shannon and Buddy Holly and Roy Orbison, and then going through my own kind of, you know, 90s phase, and then a bit of the 70s power pop and like the Brit pop and all of that in there. And like all of the different music, you know, guitar music mostly, but all the different like kind of incarnations of that I kind of took little flavors from. And then it was during that downtime that they kind of all came together in this really focused way. And I made this batch of songs and I was like, wow, this is the most me that I've ever been musically. And it was kind of just all there. It all came out at once.
Tell us about the process of starting again with a new band, US-based band now.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot harder, especially like just being older, because when you're younger, you've got nothing else to do. So when you're, you know, in your 30s, you're trying to find people, it's definitely like everyone's got careers and they've got, you know, and I was lucky in the sense that I'd been playing with a bunch of different people here and I'd kind of made like little mental notes about like certain musicians. I was like, if I do my own thing, I really want to play with this person, that person. And so I had this little list, and luckily, when I'd written the songs and I sent them out to those people, everybody at the top of my list was into it and said yes. And so I got one of my best buddies, Zach, playing bass. My friend Spencer, he plays drums. He plays in some great bands, one called Bleached, another one called Low Hum. My friend Mackenzie, she plays guitar and does backing vocals. She plays in a great band called Grady Strange. My friend Genevieve, she plays keys and vocals. They're all just super talented people. That's the great thing, especially about Los Angeles. You have these people here that probably all have a similar trajectory to me. You know, they've all kind of come here for one reason or another, and they've got probably had their hearts broken by music a few times, and they're these incredibly talented people. They just need someone to be like, hey, you shouldn't let this kind of languish, and you know, let's do something. And so it was really cool to be that kind of catalyst for that, for those people. So we kind of came together and we started just rehearsing. I had this great place in Boyle Heights here where I had crazy cheap rent. So I had this huge 4-bedroom place to myself. And so I turned one of the rooms into a rehearsal room and another one into the studio. So we would go there and rehearse and started playing shows. And then we recorded the album in there as well. And that's actually about to come out on April 6th.
Tell us about how did you go about connecting into a community, the music community, such that you are able to put together, in some ways it seems to be a dream band for you.
It was one of those things where for the first little while I was finding my feet here, I wasn't engaging quite enough with the local community, musical community. I was kind of like focusing on just getting by, making ends meet. You know, I was definitely like a few hungry years there when I moved here. And then it wasn't until that period where I kind of, you know, had found some consistency in my life. And I'd been playing with a few different people. My friend Ariel Beasley, we did some writing together, and I was kind of like her almost creative director for a while, where I was playing in her band, and then she would find other members in her band and I would show them how to play her songs. And that's how I met Spencer, the drummer, actually, for Dazzling the Demons. And so then I would start going to see some more shows. The other thing is that, I don't know if a lot of other artists relate to this, but when you're not in a good place musically, it's really hard to absorb other new music, because you kind of, there's like that ego part of you that feels a little bit like maybe embittered or jealous, and or just frustrated. And so it wasn't until I started really writing my own stuff and I felt like, okay, I feel like myself again, that I started really going out, soaking up the local scene and enjoying what was going on out there. And so that's when I started like reaching out and meeting other people in that community. And that way I found other members, and I found other people to play shows with. And that was a really great feeling, where I was like, okay, I feel plugged into the rhythm of what's happening around me in LA, you know, and not just kind of like this in this little bubble, which was really cool. And it, you know, it took quite a while. And I think it does take people quite some time when they move here to really do that.
Album comes out April 6th. Any plans around the release?
We're going to play a great venue, actually, which used to be known as the Hi-Hat in Highland Park, but it's called the Goldfish. And it's kind of got this really cool 50s aesthetic, which we're kind of drawn to, because I don't know, there's a little bit of that in our music as well. There's a bit of that doo-wop thing. So we've got, it's us and this great band from Long Beach called Softjaw. They're doing their opening, and my good friend Jordan Jones, who I played with at Zebulon, he's going to be DJing the event as well. So that's the main thing. And then we might go back to Australia at some point. We did actually do a run of shows in Australia. I brought some Americans out with me, two of the members, and then I had a couple of Aussies fill in for the other fellas, yeah.
Love it. Take it all back home.
That's right. Yeah, it's nice. It's cool. Like, it's definitely, it is nice. Like, in Australia, obviously having that bit of a leg up. So, like, Casey, who books Kiss Chasey, actually books Daz and the Demons now in Australia. She's amazing. It's funny. That was the one thing that it kind of felt very Australian when I talked to her about Daz and the Demons. I kind of sent her the record. And she said, oh, God, I love it. Let's do something. And LA, for better or worse, one of the things that does happen here, you get used to a lot of kind of people like hyping you up and then nothing comes of it. And so when she said that, I was kind of like, yeah, whatever. And then I kind of got back off the plane from Australia and then landed in the States, and she'd already kind of locked in a tour for us. And I was like, God, okay, amazing. So last year we actually got to go, yeah, and play like a whole run of shows. And I got to take these Americans to Australia for their very first trip. And they were there for they took that long flight and they're only there for like 8 days.
If you could go back to that time when you were deciding to make the move and making the move to the US, is there anything you'd tell yourself?
I would tell myself to really just focus on having a good work ethic. And also, I don't know, the thing is that I think with a lot of Australians, I'm not afraid to admit, I definitely got into the partying a bit hard when I moved here. And it kind of, I felt like probably wasted a little bit of time. But I don't know if I would change that, because it definitely made me understand myself a lot more. My main thing would be, I would just be like, have a good work ethic. Wake up every day and get into your studio. There was a period where I had this great studio set up and I would just walk past it every day. And I do kind of wish I got in there more. And I wonder what songs that could have been in existence now that didn't get to be created, you know, at that time. So I think just have a good work ethic, but also not at the cost of enjoying life.
I hear you. Great conversation. We've caught you at a fascinating inflection point of your career. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today, Daz.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, and all the best. Very much looking forward to hearing the new album in April. Thank you to everyone for listening. Today we've had Darren Cordeau, singer, songwriter, producer, guitarist, Kiss Chasey, now Daz and the Demons out here in LA. You've been listening to the Cockatoo podcast. For our newsletter, we are the Australian Music Alliance, which is part of the Pitchhiker Foundation. It's a 501c3, so you can support us in all the ways that you would support a non-profit. But the most important way is to listen in, subscribe, tell your friends, and share these amazing Australian stories. Thank you, and we'll catch you on an upcoming edition.